You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I am here to help you break free from binging, guilt, body shame, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you would like to call in with any questions, the number here is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, because when it comes to binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the answer is not yet another diet. The key to change is to focus on what is eating at you, not what you're eating, but why. So give me a call and let us figure out a way to banish binging for good. And it is possible. If you're on Instagram, hi, Debbie, I see you there. Hi, a few other people on Instagram. Hi, Beverly. If you have a question, you can also just drop it into the comment. Or again, call me. I would love to talk with you. Okay, so my topic today is 7 reasons behind self-sabotage. Liberating yourself from binge eating is a process. It is a journey. And when your relationship with food improves, which it will when you go about it the right way, you might experience a pull towards food again. You may sabotage your success. So what is that all about? What is keeping you stuck? Why does this happen? How do you deal with it? That's what I'm going to talk about today. All right. Debbie's looking forward to it, and I hope you are too. Okay, so if you ask yourself, why do I self-sabotage? What's that about? Listen, this can sound weird, but sometimes success is scary. Hi, Carly Gash, it's good to see you too. And you might think, well, that just sounds weird. Like, what do you mean success is scary? I want to lose weight. I want to stop binging. I want success. That doesn't make me nervous. I want it more than anything, right? I want it more than anything in the world. I just want to feel normal with food. That is logical. That is logical. But our minds don't always behave logically. Often, it is not logical. It's psychological. So our minds have their own way of interpreting things, you could say. So there are 7 kinds of fears that can linger in your unconscious mind, your hidden mind. It's out of our awareness, but it is not out of operation. It's still in operation. So let's understand those 7 types of fears and how they may be impacting you. So one is fear of success. Like I said, again, it sounds counterintuitive, but success can be scary. Often when we succeed, we worry. Are we going to be able to maintain the success? It can often be easier just to succeed in the first place, but then now you got to and when we don't reach our goals, we have to worry about losing ground or being humiliated by people see us lose weight and they see us gain weight, and that's humiliating and that's awful. And so sometimes we'd rather just not even have that initial success in the first place because of the fear of future humiliation if we can't keep it up. Also, some people fear the outcome of success. What do I mean by that? Friends and relatives, people you know, might change when you stop binging and lose weight, because losing weight is an outcome of not binging. Binge eating treatment isn't about weight loss, but many people, not all, many people who binge also want to lose weight. There's nothing wrong with that. It's okay if you are not practicing body acceptance. Not everybody can do that, and that's okay. You don't have to. But often when you do stop binging and lose weight, suddenly you might find that your relationships with other people change. For example, one of my clients realized that what kept her connected to this group of friends was their mutual wish to lose weight. And when they got together, often ironically for dinner, when they got together, all they were talking about were the diets that they were going to go on. They were going to go on this diet or that diet. And so they're at dinner, and ironically, again, they're talking about food and about diets and about weight loss and about what's better and about, oh, they were so good. They ate clean all day, so now they can have this or that. And she realized that once she stopped binging, she didn't want to have those conversations. She didn't want to be in you know, the diet binge cycle with her friends. And she realized she had very little to talk about with them. And this was disturbing to her. So she initially kind of sabotaged herself just to fit back in with her friends. Eventually, she started talking with her friends about other things, and things got better. Not all her relationships improved, but, you know, that was why she sabotaged herself. So when you become binge-free, you might find that you, too, have less in common with some people, or that your weight loss could invite their jealousy. Jealousy. Just a brief mention of the difference between jealousy and envy. When you're jealous, people say, oh, I'm so jealous of her. She got liberated. She stopped binging. She lost weight. I want that. I want that too. I wish I had that. That's jealousy. It's pretty benign. Envy, on the other hand, envy is what we're afraid of, because envy is, she stopped binging. She lost weight. She looks great. I hate her for that. And I'm just going to undermine her and just give her little verbal digs and not invite her to things. And I'm going to try to punish her for that. It sounds extreme, but this happens. So that is a reason that we might fear success, for the ramifications of that. Keeping up with it, maintaining that success. And if you've ever been on a diet and you've lost weight and you're successful and then you gain weight because diets, you know, the diet binge cycle, that's how it goes. It's horrible. So success leads to failure in that sense. Which leads me to the second reason, which is fear of failure. So fear of failure is related to perfectionism, rejection, and judgment. And by the way, I just want to say, if you're on Instagram and you're watching me right now while I'm on LA Talk Radio Live, and you have a question for me, feel free to drop it in the comments. I see Debbie saying she wants freedom. I hear you, Debbie. Let's get you some freedom. Liberation. Food freedom awaits. And another reason for self-sabotage is fear of failure, which again, related to perfectionism, rejection, and judgment. Many of us feel bad about ourselves when we fail at a goal. It's the worst. We set out to do something, don't do it. It's horrible. So we're conditioned to see failure as something wrong. So we feel like a failure instead of feeling like, okay, we tried that, it didn't work out. No, we make it, we're failures. We personalize failure rather than see it as a stepping stone to success. So what if I fail? Oh my God, what if it doesn't work? What if I fail? That is a powerful motivator to stop giving it our best. Then you could say, well, you know, I only failed because I did this or that. But if you give it your best and you fail, again, that feels so bad. That's humiliating. We personalize it. We feel like we are the failures. And again, I just love this analogy of baby steps. When babies start walking and they inevitably fall, we don't say, oh my God, that baby is such a failure at walking. That baby tried to walk and she failed. She's back crawling. Baby's never going to walk. Right? No, we don't say that. We say, okay, maybe you took one step, you took two steps, maybe even three or four steps, and then you fell. Listen, you can get back up again. Keep walking. Take another step. We encourage babies. But we discourage ourselves. We take some steps towards what we want, and then we inevitably fail because that's how we change. It's not a straight line. There's always the, you know, two steps forward, one step back. But we don't say to ourselves, hey, okay, we got this far. We took that many steps. All right, we had a little bit of a fall there, but we're going to get back up. I'm going to keep going. We say, oh, my God, we failed. I'm a failure. I'm the worst. I failed again. This is horrible. This is embarrassing. Oh. And then we feel bad. And you can't call yourself a failure, be mean to yourself, beat yourself up in that way, and simultaneously support yourself and lift yourself up. So what happens when we feel like a failure? Because we are telling ourselves that we're failures and we feel bad about ourselves, we go head to the kitchen to eat, to comfort ourselves, to escape, to feel better. Shiver Soap says, it's hard to feel that compassionate toward myself after trying so many inpatient programs and therapists that did not make an impact. I am not a baby. At 40, I do feel like I failed. It's not about being a baby. It's about our attitude towards failure. It's not like, hey, you're a baby and you're not comparing yourself to a baby. Yes, you're comparing yourself to taking steps and then failing, because we all fail on the way to success. So I will also say that I have treated many people who have been in many inpatient programs and many therapists who have seen many people. And, you know, the difference is that often the behavior is what the focus is, or the conscious behavior or the conscious ideas about what we know logically. And as a psychoanalyst, I can tell you that what we are affected most by is what we are not aware of, not what is logical. What is psychological, what is often hidden in our unconscious minds. So, for example, people will say, well, I was in therapy for 20 years and I talked about the past and I talked about it and I talked about it and I talked about it, and it's no better. Talking about the past is no good. And I have to say, yeah, I agree. Talking about the past does absolutely no good when you talk about it as if it only happened in the past. You have to tie what happened in the past to how you have learned to relate to yourself and the world. How is the past haunting your present? And then and only then can you create change, because otherwise you're treating it as if it happened to you in the past, which it did. But talking about that doesn't help unless you recognize that it has left an impact on you and that is affecting you. And it's not about food. Food is the solution to the problem. It is not the problem. Most eating disorder programs, I worked at one, so I can tell you, I know this firsthand, I used to work at one, treat the problem as the problem. Most cognitive behavioral therapy treats the problem as the problem. They don't even want to know about the past. They just want to change the way you think. But you can't change the way you think until you know how you came to think that way. So I would say to you, Shiver Soap, you have not failed. These programs have failed you. And that's a different way to look at it. They have failed you because they have not addressed what they needed to address. And by the way, 40, okay, you know what? I've got people who walk into my office for the first time, now my virtual office, in their 60s, in their 70s. I even have one person who's 80. It is never too late to change your relationship with yourself. But as long as you feel like you are a failure because you have failed, you're in a toxic relationship to yourself. When you can say, you know what, those programs did not help me. Those programs did not address the real problem. Those programs didn't get me. I need to have a different attitude towards the outcome of those programs. Then you can maybe start making some changes. Debbie's saying, I want to lose weight. I lose a couple pounds and that triggers me to eat. Or I get stressed, I'll gain it back. Why is this? I don't think I fear failure or success. Well, keep watching because I got more. I've only done 2 of the 7. So what if I fail again? Second reason for sabotage, what if I fail is a powerful motivator to stop giving it our best. Third reason, fear of expectation. Hold on. I'm looking at. Okay. All right. Here I am on live radio and I'm just like reading things on Instagram. I should maybe talk. All right. I'm going to talk. So fear of expectation. When we think of being binge free or reaching a specific goal weight, we start to have expectations about what life will look like on the other side of that bathroom scale number. And the fear of expectation means you believe that by changing your weight, you're going to change your life. If you think that when you stop binging and lose weight, that you're going to Now you're going to do something, right? Now you're going to do the thing that you said you wouldn't do until you lost weight. Now you're going to do all the things you expected of yourself. Oh, you've got to start dating or maybe leave your partner or find a new job or have a baby or go to grad school or take some risk. It's the when-then expectation. When I stop binging and lose weight, then I'm going to do all these things. Then there's a lot of expectation about what you will now have to do in life just because you lost weight, or about how your life is going to change, because the $60 billion diet industry tells us, hey, when you lose weight, guess what? Your life is going to change. If you're shy, you're going to become outgoing. If you're kind of your self-esteem is a little bit on the low side, oh, you're going to have so much confidence. If you're not dating, oh, you'll be surrounded by people who want to be with you. What an amazing superpower that would be if you could just lose weight and change your entire life. Wow, what power is in losing weight? Hey, that's an illusion. That's an illusion that we are given by the $60 billion, probably more than $60 billion diet industry. But we believe it. And then what happens? What happens if your life doesn't change? So the idea of not living up to expectations or feeling like now you've got to do those things that you told yourself that you would do, that could be too much. So you give up before you meet your goal because, you know, if you think, well, I've got to leave my husband, quick story. You know, my very first therapy group, I've talked about it before. I talk about it in my book. The one where the my first day, the woman looked at me and said, so what does a skinny bitch like you know about binging? Turns out I know a lot from personal experience as well as professional. In that same group was a woman who kept saying, hey, you know what? No, I just love food too much. I just have no willpower. I just have no control. But she kept coming. She kept coming to the group. On the last day of the group, she said, well, you know what? I think that if I actually did lose those 20 pounds that I want to lose, I would have to leave my husband. That's why she was sabotaging herself. That's why she wasn't letting herself lose weight and keep it off, because she had some expectation about what would happen when she lost the weight by not binging and kept it off. So fear of the expectations that you put on yourself can really be a reason for sabotage. That's why I suggest this. Hey, when you lose weight, you know what happens? One thing happens. You lose weight. Maybe 2 things happen. You have to buy smaller clothes. That's it. You don't change. Your life doesn't change. If you're shy before, you're going to be shy afterwards. If you have trouble in your job, you're going to still have trouble in your job. Your life will not change. So don't make weight loss a condition for the things that you want to do. There is someone in one of my group, the Binge Free Babes. She said that she could never date. I don't think she'd been on a date in 10 or 15 years. She could never date until she lost weight. She could never date until she lost weight. And she was adamant about that until she wasn't. And then she started dating and she got a boyfriend and they just celebrated their 1-year anniversary. And here she was thinking that she had to be a different size to find love. No, she found love. Doesn't matter what size she was. So don't tie the things that you want to losing weight. If you want to do something, think about what's stopping you from doing it. Don't make that thing weight. Carly Gatch is saying, fear of expectation. After I lose weight, I need to normalize being at a healthy weight and still taking rest in life. I feel if I'm skinny, people will think I'm healthy and they will make me work more. You know, I don't know where that comes from, Carly Gatch, because I don't know why you would look at someone who was thinner and say, oh, that person is thin so they could do more work. So Carly Gatch, I think you need to look at where you get this idea that people's expectations of you are based on your body size. You know, Oprah is not exactly a skinny mini, but boy, does she get a lot done. Just saying. Okay. Next reason is fear of impulsivity. All right. So one of my patients said that she feared that if she lost weight, she would cheat on her husband. Whenever she got close to her 130-pound dream weight goal, she would celebrate with ice cream. And then she'd celebrate for a month. And she'd binge on ice cream and everything else that she hadn't had while she was on the diet. And she would regain the weight. And then she would go back on another diet. And the cycle would continue and continue and continue. As long as she was focused on losing weight, she wasn't thinking about her unsatisfying marriage. Recently, someone said to me that they just said, oh, I was doing so well, and all of a sudden, I just like looked at myself in the mirror and said, oh my God, girl, you got to lose weight. You're disgusting. And she'd been doing so well, right? Suddenly this sabotage happened. She'd been doing so well. Her food was normalized. She was feeling good. She was doing things that she enjoyed in life. Everything was going great. She was living the life, right? And so why all of a sudden did she look in the mirror and tell herself she was, you know, she had to lose weight. She was disgusting and started focusing on everything. Macro she ate, like back to her old ways. She said, I'm back at square one. No, you're not back at square one. You're just having a little dip. Why was it? Because she was having a fight with her brother. Well, her brother didn't know it. Her brother was just being her brother. But she was getting madder and madder and madder at her brother and more pissed off at her brother. But her brother didn't know it. She was pretending that everything was fine, but she was getting really irked, really mad, really irritated. And she was afraid that she would impulsively tell her brother off. So instead of thinking about her brother and what was making her upset about her brother, she started thinking about macros and weight and all the things, because it distracted her from what was really eating at her, which was her relationship with her brother, her very controlling brother, I might add. So you see, there's a reason. It seems like the sabotage is out of the blue, but there is always a reason. So I think that one thing you can do is ask yourself, what are your hopes and your fears about creating change in your life? What is one thing that you would do if you became binge free and got to the weight that you want to be? What if you didn't think about food all the time? What would be on your mind? Because what's eating at you is that. When you focus on what you are eating, you're not thinking about what is eating at you. Debbie celebrates and comforts with ice cream. So Debbie, you have to develop new ways of celebrating and comforting other than turning to ice cream. You know, comfort words and celebration that doesn't involve food or celebrate a little bit, right? A little bit. But the problem is we have an all or nothing idea, like, oh, I shouldn't eat cake, so I ate cake to celebrate, so now I need to eat all the cake. That kind of a thing. And that this is another reason why diets fail, because the experience of deprivation or the anticipation of deprivation always makes you want the thing more. So if you think you can't have cake and then you have some cake, it's like, well, I blew it. I might as well have all the cake, and then I'm not having cake anymore for the rest of eternity. Which of course makes you want it more, and then the cycle goes again. Maya is saying fear of vulnerability. Is that a common fear? Yes, it's a very common fear. Vulnerability is scary. Vulnerability is scary. But I'd like to know more about that. If you can say what you mean by vulnerability, either in the comments or, hey, if you want to call me, the number is 323-203-0815. Feel free to call me and we can talk about it. But thinking about your weight is a lot easier to think about being vulnerable, because when it's your weight or what you're eating or what you're binging on and all of that, it's between you and you. What am I doing? I can stop that. I should stop that. It's you and food. Vulnerability is about you and other people. And when it's you and food, hey, you kind of like that's just in your own little world. You and food. You and other people, that's when it can get scary, because people can be unavailable, unpredictable, unreliable, unkind. Food is predictable, available, and reliable. Food doesn't let you down. If you're vulnerable with a person, they could hurt you. Food doesn't hurt you in the way that people do. Maya is saying, I think in relationships or friendships, it's terrible being vulnerable. Having a guard up with people is easier than sharing information about myself or becoming close with a person who could hurt you. So that tells me that potentially use it against you or reject you. Yeah, so that tells me that you might have had an experience in which someone who you trusted rejected you or treated you in a way that was very painful and hurtful. And often when we have those experiences, especially if those experiences are with the people that we ought to be able to rely on the most, oh, shoot, Carly Gash, sorry, hold that thought. I just see that you're calling. Hold on. When it's your family or family member or close friend who rejects you or hurts you or is unavailable, that doesn't treat your vulnerability with love and care, then it makes you think that the world is that way. And then you go into the world guarded against people, because if your family is that way, surely all people are that way. Or if a close person is that way, all people must be that way. So I would just challenge you to think about the idea that not everybody is that way, and that whatever vulnerability you experienced as a child, you had no choice. But now you are an adult, and you're not as helpless or as vulnerable in a way as you were then. You have to heal the past to change the way you are in the present. Carly Gash?
Hi, Dr. Nina.
Hi, Carly Gash. Can you please speak up a little bit? I can't hear you very well.
Oh, I changed my speaker output. Do you hear me better now?
I can hear you. What's going on, Carly Gash?
Fear is going on, Dr. Nina. This past 2 weeks, as I found out and I noticed that my whole pretty much life I've been living in a constant fear. And before I was afraid of this emotion my whole life, so I would escape to binging. It was just unbearable for me to like feel the fear. But then because you said that fear is false evidence appearing real acronym, then I think I already got tired of the fear standing in the way of me doing things and receiving goodness in life or living life I want. I was more of this 2 weeks more kind of feeling it and like, okay, fear is here.
Can I interrupt you first? Carly Gash, I need you to say something. False evidence appearing real is true, but it might be even more helpful to think that often the things that we're afraid of in the future are actually things that we've already experienced in the past. As I was just talking to Maya, she's afraid that people will treat her now or in the future as they treated her in the past. Same with you. So when you look at your fears that seem to be about the future, remember that they, in all likelihood, had their origins in the past. We're afraid of something happening to us again. It seems like, oh, it's going to happen in the future, but it's really like it's already happened and now it's going to repeat.
That's I also was thinking about that, just noticing how much of the fear is stemming from my past. But why I was using false evidence appearing real more this 2 weeks, because I was moving towards like overcoming this fear and actually finding a solution to deal with it, go through it and get what I want. That's why I was focusing on that. But definitely lots of those fears are stemming from past experiences. But I feel very comfortable now, Dr. Nina, after all this work in the groups and with your books. By the way, I listened to your book on repeat nonstop. I probably listened to it already 1,000 times. And each time I listen to it, you know, because my thinking is now clearer and more liberated, each time when I listen to your book, I find all the time, nonstop, I find new and new and new insights, new understanding. It's like layers and layers and layers. So it's just so helpful. And so with fear, I was kind of being together with it, letting it be in like nearby. And I'm like, okay, let me look at the fear. Okay, it's somebody in the past treated me this way. Hey, but like the world is full of different people. I can go and find actually good the people I like. And I was afraid to talk to customers. So, yes, prospect last week, I was still dragging my feet. By the way, yesterday I tested positive for COVID. And then I said, okay, I don't have to be scared and beat myself up and say, oh, my God, I have a COVID now. My life will be stopped like it was in 2020 when I got first COVID. I said, I'm going to do as much as I can. I prospected yesterday. Somebody gave me a good customer. And then I'm like, oh, my God, they will never be wanting to talk to me, blah, 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 all this negative thinking. And today I said, okay, I just need to pick up the phone and call them. So I called. Maybe, you know, I'm not an American, but I said it my way. I said, hey, I have services I can provide to you. And I know he needs it. He said, sure, shoot me an email. And then I'm like, oh, my God, my email is going to be bad because my English is not my native language. The wording I put, it's just obviously that somebody's translating from their language to English. And then I'm like, okay, I just need to send some email. I don't have to be perfect. So I send the email, and this is how I'm moving. Dealing with fear like.
Carly Gash. I think it's great. I hear that you are in the moment recognizing that you're doing some mind reading and that you're imagining the worst, or that you're projecting mm-hmm. your own negative thoughts onto other people and back at you. And the fact that you in the moment were able to recognize that and challenge that and stop that is fantastic. So I'm so glad to hear that update, and I really appreciate you letting us know that you, and letting me know, letting us know, because a lot of people have, like, there was a time where you hadn't called and I got emails like, what happened to Carly Gash? So I'm so glad to hear this positive update from you, and I just encourage you to keep that up. Keep recognizing, you know, what you think people are thinking, and remember, what you think they're thinking is either your negative thoughts or the negative thoughts of people from the past. So great job of in the moment challenging that, and then sounds like you're getting some work done. Good for you.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. I appreciate your help, and I hope you have a great day and stay safe.
Thank you, Carly Gash. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Okay, so I, great update from Carly Gash. I love that. Carly Gash, the reason I cut you off is because I really want to get to, I mean, I got the gist of what you were saying, and I thought it was fantastic. I just wanted to kind of like make sure that I have enough time to get to the rest of the 7 reasons for why we sabotage. So I hope that I was not, I apologize if I was a bit abrupt with you and cutting you off, but fantastic update. All right. Next one is fear of objectification. So sometimes weight becomes the way of protecting yourself from the unwanted gaze of others and to protect yourself from physical intimacy. People who have negative experiences with intimacy are often afraid of being viewed as objects, as things, as just like sexual objects. Whether they were sexually abused or shamed in some way about their appearance, they kind of try to disappear from view by being overweight, because when you feel overweight, a lot of times you feel invisible. You feel either super visible, like everyone's looking at you, thinking about your weight, or you feel invisible in terms of being objectified and being wanted, being looked at with interest. So if any of those fears resonate with you, it's important to figure out why you might have conflicts or be afraid of sexual attention, romantic attention, which of course are combined. So start by working through some of your, oh, Carly Gash, I'm glad that I felt like I was a little harsh with you. So, or a little rude. So I apologize. I'm glad you didn't feel it that way. So thank you for saying so on Instagram. Okay. So it's really important to work through your associations to intimacy, your associations to relationships, by considering what you fear will happen if you feel attractive and why. Again, this sounds so counterintuitive. Like, hey, I want to be hot. I want to be pretty. I want to be sexy. Logically. Psychologically, it's don't look at me. No? And this especially goes for anybody who has a history of any kind of sexual abuse or molestation, which is, of course, abuse. So, and I just want to say that kind of, like, there's also being sexualized, which doesn't even involve touch, but being leered at and having people make comments and things like that. That's being sexualized. And so, many people who have had this experience, they'll say to me, but no one did anything to me. They just made comments. Yeah, they made comments and they made you feel like a thing. They made you feel like an object. They made you feel shame. They made you feel weird about your body. Yeah, same thing. fear of objectification doesn't have to come from an actual physical encounter. It could come from being talked about in this way. All right. I'm getting towards the end, guys. All right. Number six, fear of intimacy. Remember Julia Roberts' character in the movie Runaway Bride? Well, if you haven't seen Runaway Bride, go watch Runaway Bride. Super cute movie. And she has this changing preference for eggs. The type of egg she likes, depends on the kind her fiance likes. So, and she had many fiancés because she left them all at the altar. So one of them likes scrambled eggs. She likes scrambled eggs. One of them likes, you know, over easy. She liked over easy. She had no idea what kind of eggs she actually liked. So how does this relate to fear of intimacy? Well, many of us believe on some level that we have to give up ourselves to be in a relationship. If you think relationships will drain you or change you, or you think that you've got to be like your partner, you might tell yourself you can't be in a relationship until you lose weight, putting it off. I remember when, oh, she's going to kill me for this. One of my daughters, she's the artsiest girl you've ever met in your life. Like artsy, 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 artsy. Pink hair, wore tutus to school. Like she's so artsy. And at one point she went out with a football player and she's like, you know how I've always loved football? I'm like, you don't even know what a football is. But because, I mean, she was very young, but because she was going out with a football player in high school, she was like, oh, you know what? I'm into football. Thinking she had to like mirror the guy. So that is the sense that you're going to be kind of losing yourself to have the interest of the other. Which means when you start losing weight and getting healthier and not binging and not having, not only losing weight, of course, when I'm not only talking about that, I'm talking about losing the obsession, the preoccupation, the shame, the guilt, all the things. When you start feeling better, it scares you on some level because you think that now you're going to have to maybe be with somebody and give up yourself, and that's no good. So as long as you don't feel good about yourself, you're not going to take that risk of being in a relationship and losing yourself. But the good news is that when you perceive relationships as healthy and you associate intimacy with increasing your enjoyment of life, of loving and being loved in all kinds of ways, you stop fearing that connection will make you lose yourself. Intimacy in an ideal way enhances your sense of well-being. The right person will encourage you to do the things that you love and be your own individual person, not match them. There are three parts of a relationship. There's you, then there's the other person, and then there's the us. And when you can conceive of intimate relationships as that you have your own life as it is, and they have their own life, and then you have a life together, the us, and those things are in balance, it's going to be a lot easier to think about being in relationship. And when we have fulfilling relationships, we stop seeking fulfillment from food. Okay, last one. Fear of happiness. This is the one where people are like, what? What are you crazy? I want to be happy. I want to be happy. Of course I want to be happy. What are you saying? Okay, look, we yearn for happiness logically. But on another level, many of us are afraid that if we get, quote unquote, too happy, the rug is going to be pulled out from underneath us. So what do? We don't allow ourselves to be too happy. As long as we're not happy about our binging or weight or relationship with food, we're safe. Also, there's the idea that there's kind of a positive meaning to unhappiness. Like, true artists must suffer. Or it's noble to struggle. Or suffering just makes you a better person. Somehow. Thank you, religion. Some religions. So that can translate into a notion that you're a good person if you suffer, and a bad person if you embrace joy. And when you allow yourself to trust the idea that happiness can last, you can allow yourself to stay healthy and happy without sabotaging your efforts. And again, think about how many expressions we have in our culture that talk about this. Like, oh, it was too good to last. Oh, I was waiting for the other shoe to drop, and now it has. Oh, the rug got pulled out from underneath me. Oh, I knew the bubble would burst. Right? These are all expressions that talk about the idea that good things can't last, and that if you're happy, it can't last. And so if you on some level think that the minute you're happy, it's going to be taken away from you, why let yourself be happy? Again, this is not logical. This is not rational. This is psychological. So consider, which of these seven fears do you most identify with? Because identifying the true reasons behind self-sabotage is the first step to really creating lasting change. And I guarantee you, Shiver Soap, if you're watching this still, I can't see. I doubt if they're talking about things like this in your inpatient program. So how do you deal with it? Really briefly, because I only have a few minutes. Be compassionate. Be kind to yourself. We all make mistakes. We all screw up sometimes. Don't shame yourself. Your self-talk influences the way you feel and the way you feel about yourself. So speak to yourself in a way that you would speak to a friend. Don't make a mistake part of your identity. And remember, you have the ability to get past this, to learn from it, and move on. Also, acknowledge your progress. There is an old proverb. I love this. It is, oh, I'm glad you're here, Shiver Soap. There's an old proverb, fall down 7 times, get up 8. It is normal to fall on your journey, on any journey. Anything that you learn is a journey. And it is normal to fall or fail at times in that journey. And when you're on a journey to change your relationship with yourself and with food, that's no different. What's important is that you get back up and keep going, that you learn from each experience. Yes, I think that should be your next tattoo. Fall down 7 times, get up 8. Has nothing to do with being a baby. Has to do with being a person in life. Nobody sits down to play the piano for the first time and plays it, much less Tchaikovsky. You don't sit down at the piano and play even Mary Had a Little Lamb. You have to learn where to put your fingers, how to make sounds, how to do the chords, and you keep practicing until one day you actually play. Also, neutralize fear. Future fears can have a here and now effect. You can create here and now worry about something that hasn't happened yet. This is what if thinking, and it creates anxiety in the present about something that hasn't happened and may not happen. What if I gain weight after eating that cookie or sandwich or pizza or whatever? What if I can't ever stop binging? What if I ask someone out on a date and they say no? What if I get rejected? All of these are what ifs. They're fears about the future. And the antidote to future fears is to stay present in the here and now. What if is about fear. What is about facts. So replace what if with what is, which is reality, the facts, what you know to be true in the present. I am the same weight I was this morning. I'm working on a new approach to stop binging. You know, lots of people in my life, my friends, my colleagues, my family, they find me friendly and approachable. So maybe the person I ask out will as well. And if they don't, oh well, their loss. When you think about what is actually happening, you're less likely to feel anxious, worried, depressed, all of it, and therefore you're less likely to turn to food to cope. So there you have it, the 7 reasons for self-sabotage and some things that you can do about it. Thank you so much for joining me. And by the way, if you would like to get the book that Carly Gash has listened to over 1,000 times, it is available on Audible, on Amazon iReadit. It's also available on in hardback, hardcover, paperback, and Kindle. So get it now. I go into depth on the things that I talked about today on this show. That's it. Have a very good week. I will see you next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Stay curious, not critical. And remember, you're doing the best you can. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on